Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show that we've been waiting for about 167 hours. You've been waiting, too.
Wow, you calculate that.
167 hours. Yes, and so we have to start, of course, with the biggest news of the week is the report, the duck report. Last week, we reported to you that we had nine ducks. Well, I should say nine eggs. Nine duck eggs in incubation phase. Now, for reasons I'd rather not get into, only five of the eggs made the final leg. But three have already hatched and are hatching at this very moment as we go to tape. As we go to air. I don't know what you call it on a podcast. As we go to bit. Right now, they're hatching as we speak. And so there's rejoicing, much rejoicing at the McBurney compound, because we're hoping to have about a half a dozen ducks by the end of the day today, because we have one surviving adult male, right? Mm-hmm. We have one surviving adult male who's been very lonely. He sits and he looks where Mama Duck was when she was snatched by the beast. And he just sits there and looks mourning and longingly. Yes, maudlin, I think is what you call it. So anyway, if we have any hatchings that occur during the show, we'll be sure to report those to you. In the meantime, Ghislaine Maxwell, a friend of Jeffrey Epstein, friend, associate, conspirator, I don't know what you call it. She's been arrested. She was arrested in New Hampshire, oddly enough. And we all know what she did, so I don't have to get into it. Her victims were as young as 14 years old when they were groomed and abused by both Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein. So justice being served. We will update you on her suicide as soon as we get the details. We'll bring you that. Then that may be breaking news during the show today. You just never know. So there we have that. Now we go across the pond to the United Kingdom. Where in Ireland, you may remember that Ireland legalized abortion last year. This past week was Ireland's one-year anniversary of legalizing the murder of innocent unborn people. And Ireland finished the year with 6,666 abortions. That's the official tally of the Irish government. There were about 60,000 live births and about 6,666 abortions, meaning that Ireland killed a little more than 10% of its potential population. Well, no, actually 10% of their population they murdered last year, legally, under color of law, sanctioned by the governing authorities. Oh, and also 375 women went to England to get abortions because in England they'll kill the kid if the baby has Down syndrome or other disabilities. They'll also do more late-term abortions in England. So the total in Ireland, if you tally it all up, was 7,041. So the abortion industry is on the move in Ireland. When malevolent evil senses weakness, he puts his boots on, and he's marching across Ireland, has been for a year. They only loosened restrictions. They had abortions in Ireland before. They just dressed it up and made it difficult. In 2018, eight Irish women per day went to England for abortions. That's right. You had to go to England to get an abortion. So it's gone from eight in 2018, eight women a day, 20 women a day in Ireland are now killing their innocent children. That's from the personhood file. As you know, we are advocates of the fact that an unborn child is a person with all the rights of any other person. and that murdering those children will lead to the destruction of a nation. It will lead to the collapse, the breakdown and collapse of civilization. And a nation that does such a thing will be destroyed and will be ruled by someone stronger and more than likely more wicked than them. Speaking of that, we go to the Queering of America file, where last Friday, Russian President Vladimir Putin mocked the U.S. Embassy in Moscow for flying a homo rainbow flag. Yes, Vlad said that this probably reflects the sexual orientation of the staff there in the U.S. Embassy. Putin's comments followed a nationwide vote there in Russia, enshrining the definition of marriage as a union between a man and a woman. Vladimir Putin, bloodthirsty, murderous dictator, still not deranged enough to think that men can marry men and women can marry women. It's a pretty low bar. But Putin said during the campaign that he would not let the traditional notion of mother and father. Do we have tape? We will not let the traditional notion of a mother and father be subverted. Okay. So I think I've said all I need to say on that. Yeah, it's a low bar, but even Vladimir Putin clears it. He knows that boys are boys and girls are girls. And he knows that a marriage is a boy and a girl. And anything else is, well, it's something different. And now Putin's not willing to come out and say that it's corrupt and wicked and sinful. He says we should just wait. Everybody just wait until they're adult, you know? Let's not teach the children this. But we go one step further. We say, don't teach the adults this either, Vlad. That's why I say we will be conquered and ruled by someone more evil and quite stronger and quite possibly more evil than we are. And it probably won't be Vladimir Putin. It will probably be Xi Jinping, whatever his name is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And speaking of Xi, we go to the Dim New World file where we have a report from Hong Kong. A year ago, you remember, this is according to the Federalist, millions took to the streets of Hong Kong to save the city's liberties. And now it's clear that that fight was lost. We have a report from... Well, let's just... The legislation was kept secret for months, and then this secret legislation was approved by the National People's Congress, a very Orwellian name for that group, the People's Congress, yes, yes. It's actually just a puppet of the Communist Party at this point. And this new law implements punishments including lifetime imprisonment for residents who violate the party's new rules for the city. There's a broad list of crimes included, including protesting. Any protest activity is now a crime. Terrorism for disrupting traffic, subversion for disrupting government agents, and secession for speaking of independence. Also, any attempt of protest groups to work with the international community is now a criminal offense, meaning they can't even ask for help from outside. Not that there was anyone willing to help them. This wouldn't have happened if there were men willing to stand up and help Hong Kong, but there are none any longer. We have a quote from Nobel Peace Prize nominee Joshua Wong, who's been one of the leading voices, who's probably been arrested already, because this story is from, July 1st. It's 4 days ago, so he's probably already in prison or in hiding. But he says, quote, if my voice will not be heard soon, I hope that the international community will continue to speak up for Hong Kong. He then proceeded to quote Psalm 23:3, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me, your rod and your staff comfort me. So he quoted the Bible. Wow, very, very sad. What we've allowed to happen to Hong Kong and soon Taiwan. Shameful, as a matter of fact. Utterly shameful. In fact, Prime Minister Boris Johnson of England, who handed Hong Kong back to China, even though the government that signed the agreement with England in 1897, that government no longer existed. A criminal gang had taken over China in between 1897 and 1997. But the British were already relying on cheap slave labor in China for cheap shoes and cheap shirts and cheap trinkets. And so they said, yeah, you know, even though you're a criminal gang that enslaves people, the slaves come in handy because they make cheap stuff. And yeah, we'll let you have Hong Kong. But let's make an agreement. Let's sign an agreement with a criminal gang. All right. Anyway, this past week, Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of the formerly Great Britain, told the House of Commons that Britain will be offering a path to citizenship for up to 3 million Hong Kong citizens. I forget how many people there are in Hong Kong. There's like 10 or 20 million. Anyway, Boris Johnson said that the national security law represents a breach of the 1985 Sino-British Joint Declaration. That was an allegedly legally binding agreement that was to protect freedom in Hong Kong for 50 years after the British handed it back over. Well, who did you think you were dealing with? Of course, Boris Johnson didn't do it. Let's see, it was Margaret Thatcher. It was Margaret Thatcher who made the deal with the Chinese. It's just pathetic. Sad, pathetic, weak, and, terrifying if you are an advocate of liberty in Hong Kong. It's actually terrifying. You lose your freedom, you'll lose your life. Speaking of all that, we come back to America, into the Enemy Within file, where the Federalist reports on the modern-day iconoclasts. By the way, I mentioned that word last week, and I realized that many of you, like me, matriculated in the government schools, and you're probably not familiar with such large words. Iconoclasts. It comes from the, I believe it's Greek, icon, meaning image, and clash, meaning breaker. They break images. And iconoclasm, in and of itself, is not necessarily a bad thing. Because, a righteous king in Israel would destroy all the pagan idols, tear them down every now and then. So I'm not against iconoclasm just to be against it. It's just I'm against this kind, what they're doing now. There's a civil way to have the authorities remove images that are offensive, and I'm not against that. I'm against tearing down statues by Marxists to erase our history. Anyway, the Federalist reports that this new wave of iconoclasm across the United States. The author says there are deep and profound reasons for these planned destructions. Throughout history, rulers have sought to erase the memory of their rivals. Did you get that? New rulers seek to erase the memory of their rivals. And America's ascendant monarch is now Sean King of the Black Lives Matter movement. And he has called for the destruction of Christian iconography. He calls anything, any statue, any symbol of Christianity, he calls a gross form of white supremacy, racist propaganda, and tools of oppression, says America's ascendant monarch, Sean King. Now, he wraps this up in the racial clothing of he's upset about Christian icons with light skin. He says he doesn't like Jesus or Mary portrayed with white skin. That's with light skin. I'm sorry, did I say white skin? Is that racist to even say white? I think that's because of my white privilege that I said white. I meant light. It says light right here in the article. So Sean King says that it's the light-skinned Christian. Really? Is that why you tore down Junipero Serra out in California? Is that why? Junipero was a person of color. What you hated about that, Sean, was that he had a cross. And the author of the Federalist article rightly points out that the real goal of America's ascendant monarch, Sean King, and the Black Lives Matter movement is the canceling of Christianity. Because Marxism is an enemy of Christianity. They are natural enemies. One cannot exist in the presence of the other. One will be imprisoned and put to death, and one will rule. The Federalist author, which I will link to all of these articles, says that if this trajectory isn't stopped, the Marxist among us will take Sean King seriously and begin to burn churches like they're burned in France. And in France, it's the Islamists and the Marxists who burn churches. And in fact, Islamists and Marxists are really the same thing. It's all the same anti-Christ, anti-God war that's gone on from the beginning of And it's just dressed up in different clothing. The Muslims dress it up in a burqa. The Marxists dress it up in class warfare. But they both come from the same place. They're both fighting the same God. And I am a sworn enemy of both. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us. Speaking of icons, the Washington Redskins have been browbeaten by the leftist woke Marxists, and the Washington Redskins are going to change their name. It's a fait accompli. Yeah, they're already on their knees looking for a new name. They were on their knees, and people thought maybe they were looking for a new name under their desk, but they said, no, we're just kneeling and bowing before Black Lives Matter.
But wouldn't you like that if your What's name that? Was after?
What's that now?
If your team wasn't after your name or...
I would like my team to be named the Irish, the Fighting Irish, or something like that, right? No, that'll have to go too. Anyway, the best take I read on the Redskins name change this past week was some sports writer, I don't know who he was, but he said, it looks like there will be a new name at the bottom of the NFC East standings next year, which I thought that was kind of funny. What's not so funny is the guillotine, okay? So from the Say You Want a Revolution file, videos were posted this past week on social media of what Breitbart calls protesters. So here's the thing, folks. Even the allegedly conservative media was educated in the urinalism schools of America, and so by their very nature, they can't help but buy into the whole propaganda speak. They say protesters placed a guillotine in front of Jeff Bezos' compound in Washington. Okay, placing a guillotine in front of somebody's house, that's not a protest. That's a threat of violence. Oh, but it was just a model guillotine. It wouldn't have actually cut anyone's head off. You know, just like the statues aren't actually people. No one's actually being hurt. Don't get so worked up about all this. They're just venting their frustration over systemic racism. And the only reason you question it is because of your white privilege, says pale, skinny, white chick with a degree in education from... Anyway. Let's see. So the one video showed them actually setting up the guillotine. In another video, protesters can be seen giving a speech stating the following. This is what they said out loud. When they become threatened and we have no voice, the knives come out. They said at night in front of someone's house with a guillotine. They were standing next to the guillotine when they said the knives are coming out. So that's no longer a protest, and someone should let the urinalists over at Breitbart know that they should call them either rioters or Marxist revolutionaries, but not protesters. Protesting is something completely different. Trust me, I know. I've done it. All right. Now, for some good news. Finally, the law is, federal prosecutors have brought charges, including arson and murder, in about 150 cases connected to the rioting. But Newsmax says relating to the rioting and the protests. But that's not the case. That's just urinalism again. The 150 cases, including arson and murder, are for the rioting. Because you can't be arrested in America for protesting. Protesting is legal. Not Breitbart. Who is this? Newsmax. Urinalists. Nobody gets charged for protesting. All right. So that's the good news. Here's the bad news. It's a good news, bad news thing. The two Brooklyn lawyers who hurled a Molotov cocktail at a marked New York City Police Department car are free on bail. That's right. These two social distancing warriors, is that? I'm sorry, social justice warriors. A social distancing warrior, that would be Gavin Newsom. Or Nathan Flincher, the county, what is he? County supervisor there in San Diego County. Nathan Flincher. Also named Nathan Fletcher, but we like to call him Nathan Flincher for obvious reasons. These two young lawyers somehow came up with their $250,000 that they needed for bail. I wonder where that came from. Anyway, probably from Hollywood. Probably Spike Lee. You have to look into that. Anyway, so these two were applied for bail. And so to get out on a $250,000 bond, you have to come up with $25,000 in cash. Now, these two are lawyers, so it's possible they had that kind of cash laying around because they had recently shaken somebody down. It's possible. But these types of people, they're Marxists. They generally don't. They use other people's money for what they do. Anyway, the federal prosecutors had appealed the offer of bail. So the attorney general via the U.S. prosecutor's office tried to keep these two in jail. But the U.S. Court of Appeals ruled in favor of granting bail. You may have seen the video where, should I name these two? I won't name these two. The girl threw the Molotov cocktail through the window of a police car and then hopped into a getaway car driven by the guy. And it's all on video. So this says allegedly, but I mean, I watched the video. There's no alleging that. The two lawyers who threw the Molotov cocktail through the police car window faced the possibility of life behind bars. A possibility. Very, very minimal possibility, I can assure you of that. In fact, they'll probably be granted professorships while standing trial. Before they're even found not guilty or before they're busted out of jail by a mob with torches and... let's see here. Now, we have another report on the Black Lives Matter movement. Here we go. Devonier Johnson is a Madison, Wisconsin activist. He's been present at every protest following the death of George Floyd. He has now been arrested. He was arrested on Tuesday after he brought a baseball bat and a bullhorn into a tavern and started shouting at customers. A baseball bat. Now, yeah, even the bullhorn is not appropriate inside a tavern, okay? That So what's up with this guy? Let's see here. So the police arrested him because you're in with a baseball bat. You're in a bar. You're yelling at people through a bullhorn. That's out of order. Well, his arrest sparked violent riots. Two people were assaulted, including a state senator. So the riots start breaking out after the police arrest a criminal. Why? Because Marxists worship criminals. Why? Because their whole worldview is a criminal construct. They're thieves and murderers is what they are. So they naturally like thieves and murderers. So the riots begin. And fortunately, they've been quelled there in Madison, although there has been much destruction. Well, now federal prosecutors have brought extortion charges against this organizer, Devonier Johnson. They say he threatened to bash windows of downtown businesses unless employees gave him money. Yeah. Yeah. Here's what the business owners said. They said he came in and he said, "You don't want 600 people to come down here and destroy your business and burn it down. The cops are on our side. Have you noticed that when you call them, nothing happens to us?" That was his threat to local business owners, and he demanded money, food, and drinks. Wow. Right? So, folks, these communists are simple thieves. That's what they are. At heart, they're just thieves. This guy would rob a tavern. This guy would rob a laundry. Communists, they just rob the whole nation. They're robbers, kidnappers, and murderers. They just do it on a national scale. Which, if this trajectory does not stop, America is going to be punished for her sins. And punished not by God, because that would be chastening and that would be profitable, but instead punished by the Philistines, who are being allowed to rage through the streets. I mean, you had two cops. What was it? Two cops and a bus driver shot this past week in Kansas City, Missouri. One of the cops is in critical condition, and unfortunately, only one of the suspects was killed. Scary stuff. But the castration of law enforcement goes on. You've got this organization, let's see, from WorldNet Daily, the Electronic Frontiers Foundation, which is a Marxist organization who stands with Black Lives Matter. The Electronic Frontiers Foundation says that technology companies must rethink how the tools they design and sell to police departments minimize accountability and exacerbate injustice. That's right. They're talking specifically about the Ring, the doorbell, the video doorbell. They don't like that. They say the video doorbell is one of the worst offenders against, one of the worst offenders. It minimizes accountability and exacerbates injustice by videotaping reality. By videotaping what actually happened, that threatens the sensibilities of the Electronic Frontiers Foundation as well as Black Lives Matter. EFF, the Electronic Frontiers Foundation, is calling out Amazon. That's right, because Amazon has agreements with about 1,300 police departments that now have access to its images. Why? Because its images don't lie. Its images don't make mistakes. It's videotape. Well, Amazon has released a statement saying it stands in solidarity with the Black community. That's great. Now listen to this. Listen to what the Electronic Frontiers Foundation, listen to what they say on their website. They say if a Ring camera captures demonstrations, the owner is at risk of making protesters identifiable to police and vulnerable to retribution. Even if the camera owner refuses to voluntarily share footage of a protest with police, law enforcement can go straight to Amazon with a warrant and thereby circumvent the camera's owner. Terrifying. Okay, so I hope everybody caught that, but I'm going to explain just in case. I mean, I know. We all went to public school. The police cannot go get a warrant to get camera footage of a protest. There has to be a crime credibly alleged in order to get a warrant, okay? And if a Ring camera captures demonstrations, demonstrators are... Do we understand what the difference between demonstrating and rioting, looting, larceny? I mean, really? The demonstrators are not vulnerable to retribution. There can be no retribution from the state for protesting. Not in America, at least not yet. But looting, extortion, murder, assault. Is that who you want to protect, Electronic Frontiers Foundation? We know that's who you want to protect because you're Marxists, you're murderers, and you're thieves. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and we're back. I want to give a little bit of advice. This is on a personal level. This is not related to the news or anything like that. Just a little advice on how to live peaceably with one another. I have a little shop detached from the main house in the McBurney compound, and at some point last week, the bird whisperer had climbed up onto one of the shelves in my workshop, and she noticed mouse droppings. And so being an assertive person, she set up a mouse trap up there on the shelf, out of view of anyone. And the mouse trap was effective. But I only found out about that as I came into workshop day after day and noticed the increasingly putrid smell of rotting flesh. And so my advice to everyone, if you put a mousetrap somewhere where it cannot be seen, tell other people. Tell other people so that they're not... Anyway, by the time we got that thing out of here, well, I don't even want to go into it. It was pretty nasty, that's all. Don't be hiding mousetraps. That needs to be publicly disclosed.
Wait, did you get that?
No, I have to... In fact, we've got another mouse that I just remembered. We heard the mousetrap work last night. We thought something fell in the kitchen, and then we're like, oh, yeah, that's right. There's a mouse trap under there. And so I will get that out of there before it putrefies. But we were both aware of that one. That one wasn't going to slip by anybody. All right, folks, I've been angry, and I've been depressed, and I've talked to you about how this COVID-19 delusion is making thoughtful people insane. Well, I have decided to be happy about it. You know what? I'm going to go back to the, let's go to the Strange Bedfellows file because I can't carry that off at this point. Okay. Van Jones, you remember Van Jones, the Marxist agitator with a show on CNN? He recently commended President Trump for his recent executive order on police reform. Yes, the host of the Van Jones show on CNN enthusiastically supported Trump for his order to create a system for tracking police misconduct, a ban on most chokeholds, and incentivization of officer training in the aftermath of the riots and the looting. Now, the New York Post says that Trump's order came in the aftermath of George Floyd's killing, But in reality, Trump's order came after the riots and the looting. And that's the way history will judge Donald Trump's assault on the police. It was an assault out of fear of the mob. let's see here. Now, Donald Trump's order against the police has been described as delusional by Color of Change, a group that Jones himself founded about 15 years ago. So the hardcore Marxists in the streets, the brown shirts, they're not happy with Donald Trump's order because it doesn't go far enough. Van Jones, he's happy about it. Why? Because he helped write it. Van Jones joined his new friend, Jared Kushner, in the White House. Donald Trump invited Van Jones into the White House. Oh, no, Jared Kushner. No, nobody gets into the White House unless they're invited by the President of the United States. The President is the chief executive. The buck stops on his desk. So he let Van Jones, Marxist agitator, enemy within, into the White House. And they discussed ways to frame the order against the police. helping Jones was Jessica Jackson, who runs Cut 50, a prison reform group that Jones also founded. Another Marxist agitation group founded by a Marxist agitator. And they were all invited into the White House to write executive orders attacking the police after the riots and the looting and the murders and the burning and the tearing down of statues. I mean, Trump talks a good game. He doesn't even talk that impressive of a game to me, actually. I think he's fairly dim-witted. But anyway, he does the fireworks and the red, white, and blue and waves the flag and holds the Bible up and all that. But when it comes to actually saving America from the Vandals, the Visigoths, he does very little. I'm not sure why the left hates him in such a deranged manner. He's been a relatively leftist president. All right, meanwhile, and here's the thing. America may not be salvageable because her sins are so horrible that there may be no avoiding this, what we are going over the cliff into. There may be no avoiding this. It's overdue. I mean, you can't murder 6 or 7 or 10 million innocent people and not expect your nation to be taken from you. The authorities cannot condone the murder of innocent people for 50 years and kill more people than the Nazis, and you don't pay for that. The sad thing is that even those of us who stood up against it are going to be paying for it. And I guess we deserve it. We're the ones who lost. You lose a war, you pay the consequences. Anyway, but it's coming. And it's coming quickly with significant momentum. And you know, the liberals, and I'm talking about the passive liberals, not the ones marching in the streets looting, but the ones sitting at home tapping out talking points on Facebook about how you should wear your mask and just shut up and get in line, and how Black Lives Matter, and they put the black square up on their Instagram. These are the passive liberals, or they think they're passive, and they think that civilization is the natural order. They think we're all just going to get along. You know, they think just like us, civilization evolved. It's the natural state of things. And what they don't understand is that that is not the natural state of things. The natural state of things is tyranny and enslavement and war. And injustice, that's the natural order. Civilization is something we have to work on every day. And if you blink and flinch and go passive and decide to sit home and smoke weed and tap out talking points on Facebook, your civilization will be taken from you. And eventually the mob will set up the guillotine in front of your house. We go to the justice file where 35-year-old Anthony Gonzalez has been charged with felony assault and criminal possession of a weapon in Manhattan. Last week, he leaned over a stroller and cut the face of a 2-year-old boy with a sharp object for no apparent reason. The babysitter I can't imagine what this would be like. Just slashes the face of a 2-year-old boy for no apparent reason. I shouldn't say that. Breitbart does report that a few weeks ago, New York City disbanded its anti-crime plainclothes officers unit. And there has been a relentless assault on the law and law enforcement for the better part of a month now, over a month. Relentless. And that emboldens madmen. Madmen. You know, part of my sales pitch, I have a line where I tell people, you know, great things are going to happen. The future is bright if we can keep civilization from falling into the hands of the madmen. And it was always kind of a tongue-in-cheek, half-joking type of statement. But I don't think I can use that line anymore because it's no longer hypothetical. So let me get back to how I'm going to try to be happy. So I told you that, you know, this whole COVID-19 thing and walking around seeing everybody look like an Antifa revolutionary or bank robber with the masks. It's just so eerie and creepy and anyway, so it's making thoughtful people insane. I mean, just watching the masses mindlessly comply with ridiculous orders is a painful daily experience. And when I experience pain every day, it affects me negatively. Because it's the stopping and the pondering of the logic and the sense of it all that hurts my brain and it makes me emotionally fragile. Causes a rise in anxiety. But I'm sure that if you decide you're just going to go along and just keep your head down and just avoid any attention, just push through it, just try to get through it. Hey, this will all come to an end someday. You know, that might work for a while. But I think eventually we all go nuts. I mean, the normal people. The people who actually hold civilization together, eventually we're all going to lose our minds. I mean... Now, I was going to talk about how I'm going to be happy. Well, maybe I'm not able to. I'll tell you what I'm trying to do, because here's what I feel in my heart is that the ruling left, which is a term that I coined. The ruling left was given an enormous amount of power when so many among us flinched in the face of a potential crisis back in March. February, March, the COVID-19, everybody flinched and was too scared to function. Everybody froze. Well, I'm becoming increasingly convinced that the ruling left are using these newfound powers that we handed to them when we flinched to now inflict upon us the same tortured, miserable existence that they've been suffering through since November 8th, 2016. I think they've been feeling like I feel now. Like they're living in some sort of bizarro, alternative, painful, horrible universe. Since the day Donald Trump was elected, they've been in psychological pain. And they've been looking for a way to vent that pain, and now they've found it. And you know, the way I'm going to try to deal with this going forward is to try to be more of a happy warrior, because I have a tendency to just get angry and negative. And I've discovered over the past week or so that yelling at people and telling them that they've lost their balls and they've lost their minds, that doesn't work. People don't respond well to that. And so I'm going to try another tactic. I'm going to assume, for the sake of my own sanity, that the majority of people, and even the majority of our political leaders, are genuinely obsessed with slowing or stopping the spread of this particular virus. Instead of these people are idiots mindlessly destroying the country, I'm going to attempt to reframe my worldview to identify these poor people as victims of fear-induced mental illness, deserving not my anger, deserving not my contempt, but deserving my concern and some sort of treatment. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. In between the break there, in the break there, my extremely attractive audio engineer was showing me video of all the illegal fireworks in Los Angeles last night, the 4th of July. They were everywhere. We heard an awful lot of fireworks around here. I think fireworks are illegal pretty much everywhere anymore. But there was a specific order related to COVID-19 banning fireworks, banning family gatherings. Yes, yes. Gavin Newsom said the biggest problem in California was not the pulling down of statues. It was not the rioting, the looting, the murders, the police not responding. That wasn't the biggest problem this weekend was going to be family gatherings. Families getting together, barbecuing, and shooting off fireworks. That's all right. But the people in Los Angeles, at least, and that was a pretty good work of a video. Pretty good shot there of all the fireworks. So the people spoke. Yeah. And the police did not go out and arrest. Has anyone noticed, and I don't want to throw gasoline on the fire here, but has anyone noticed that there are more Americans in blackface right now than ever before in our history? Everywhere I go, Americans are wearing blackface. Black masks. Black seems to be the most popular mask. Why? Because black is the new black. Black goes with everything. Black gives the appearance of neat and clean. Yes, black and white. And so black turns out to be the favorite color mask. Does that mean maybe that's a sign of systemic racism? The fact that we like black means we hate black people. Something like that. All right, so now that I've altered my worldview and I'm looking at these poor people who are suffering from a disorder for which I am genuinely motivated to find some sort of treatment for these people, I have to find a way to approach it with humor, I think. I'm working on that. The Hollywood Reporter did a survey last week. They found that only 35% of Americans are willing to go to the movies this year. And that's not because the movies are horrible. Okay, because in the McBurney compound, 0% of the population is willing to go to a theater. But it's not because we're afraid of getting sick. But only 35% of people say they're willing to go this year. That means 65-70% of the people in the country are genuinely so afraid of this virus that they're afraid to get into a theater with other people. Only 15% said they would return to theaters immediately. And then the rest, 60%. When asked if people would prefer to watch a movie in a theater or at home on a streaming service, only about a quarter of the people said they would go to a theater, and the vast majority said they preferred streaming. Like, why would you go to a theater anyways? Hang around with a bunch of people you don't know, you know, and you have to be quiet. You can't pause it and go to the bathroom or anything. Why would you do that to yourself? We have big screen TVs and we have sound systems now. I mean, who needs a theater? Anyway, in the same survey, now this is instructive. In the same survey, more than half of the people surveyed said that they planned to see a historical film about black people, slavery, or segregation in the next year. Okay, so that this really proves my extremely attractive audio engineer's assertion that the people's attitudes will change with the breeze. It'll change on a dime. As soon as the authority figures that these people actually look up to start saying that it's okay to go into theaters, this survey data, the numbers will reverse immediately. And so if enough of us push back on the fear-mongering, and we have to push back with gentleness and humor somehow, we can try to treat these mentally wounded people. These people have been wounded psychologically by disingenuous, rapacious, power-hungry socialists. They've been injured mentally, and we need to help them. But I still say that putting a mask on is entertaining the delusion. So I will not wear the mask unless there are certain situations where if I have to, I will, I suppose. But those situations are getting fewer and farther in between. I've decided now that I'm just going to stop shopping anywhere that makes me wear a mask. And that's difficult. Because it's really weird. My extremely attractive audio engineer and I, when the lockdown first happened, we assumed it would be over by Easter. And that the fear level would break as soon as people realized that. But now here we are, it's the 4th of July. And it's even worse. People are more scared now than they were in March. At least that's the way it feels. Maybe it just feels that way because everyone's wearing a mask now. And now there's a physical manifestation of people's fear. All right, so. So we're gonna put on our happy face, and we're gonna try to help these people because they need our help. And screaming at them does not work. I will tell you that it does not work. Okay. If anyone can think of humorous ways to respond to the term, to the accusation, "Where's your mask, sir? You have to put on a mask, sir. If you don't put on a mask, you'll have to leave the store." So if you people can help me with humorous ways to
I don't know.
Humorous ways to interact, to help that person to think and to realize how foolish they are, then I will be eternally grateful. All right. Meanwhile, from the widespread panic file, scientists have discovered a new flu virus in China amongst pigs. And researchers claim that this new virus carries all the hallmarks of being highly adapted to infect humans and need close monitoring, similar to the swine flu that broke out in 2009. There's evidence of recent infections in people in the swine industry in China. Can you imagine that's your life? What do you do? I work in the swine industry in China. What are the odds you're going to get infected with something, right? Anyway, we have a quote from some scientist. He's a scientist. He says, no, this isn't a scientist. This is Science Magazine. actually, it's Robert Webster for science. He's an influenza investigator. He says, we don't know if a pandemic is going to occur until it occurs. Will this one do it? God knows, he says. Unquote. Well, don't blame God, Bob. It's not God. It's God. Anyway. So, folks, malevolently evil, power-hungry, rapacious people have found basically an on and off switch, the on and off switch for civilization. And it's called fear of pandemic. They found it. And they're not going to let this switch go. They've got it. And they're going to turn it on and they're going to turn it off. And the poor, psychologically wounded people are going to respond the same way every time. This is not going to end unless a lot of people start pushing back on this. We need to start making a lot of sense to these poor, wounded, psychologically damaged people, or they are going to hand our civilization over to the Marxist revolutionaries for fear of getting sick, which is sad to say, but it, folks, if we don't wake up our neighbors, it is lights out. It is lights out. Malevolent evil will turn the switch. Meanwhile, we go back to Sweden. You remember, people, I told you I would be honest and open about wherever Sweden landed, that the data would not lie. Sweden has a population of 10.2 million people. And they've had how many die? 5,280 dead in Sweden of coronavirus, or at least with it. It kind of depends on how you count, but let's just give it to them. All right. So they're, Denmark next door has a population of 5 million. They have about 600 dead. Denmark locked down. Sweden did not. Okay, so I'm willing to admit that, like masks, lockdowns may provide some modest mitigation of the transmission of the disease. It's quite possible. Obviously, I don't know everything. Okay, so let's run the numbers. There's a differential. Sweden has a fatality rate of 0.051%. Denmark has a fatality rate of 0.01%. So here's my question. Was a 0.04% differential worth breaking the entire world and sentencing approximately 10 million people in the third world to starve to death? Was it worth it? And keep in mind that Sweden and Denmark are all white, and the people being sentenced to die in the third world are black and brown. They're people of color. So you got that too. Was it worth it? If that's even why, because we don't really even know why the data came down this way. Was it the fact that Denmark locked down and Sweden didn't? Because Sweden pretty much voluntarily locked down, at least for the first few weeks. Anyway, that we'll continue to follow the numbers on all that. But as of now, I'll say, okay, maybe locking everyone in their house and scaring everyone has some effect on the rapidity of the transmission of the disease. But is it worth it? Just think about that. And now we're going to go into the science, okay? We're going to talk about science relevant to COVID-19 social policy. This is from a much longer article published in Technocracy. They report that Dennis Rancourt, PhD, has published over 100 peer-reviewed studies in his career, but ResearchGate chose to censor and remove this paper that we're about to report on. Why? Well, you'll find out. Because Rancourt, in his paper, points to extensive randomized controlled trials. These are studies, actual studies. And by the way, folks, the only clinical trial that's real in a case like this of trying to figure out whether or not a mask helps or social distancing helps, the only type of study that's real is an actual randomized controlled trial with actual viruses and actual people and real. He also points to a number of meta-analysis reviews of randomized controlled trials, which all show that masks and respirators do not work to prevent respiratory influenza-like illnesses or respiratory illnesses believed to be transmitted by droplets and aerosol particles. In fact, he points out that it would be a paradox if masks and respirators worked, given what we know about viral respiratory disease. Well, what do we know? This is a novel coronavirus. It's different than anything before it, right? No, it's not. It's a little different. But it's not like a whole new different thing. We've known about these. And these masks and filthy bandanas on your face, they're not new either. We've known about those for a long time. So the main transmission path for respiratory diseases is established as long residence time aerosol particles. These are particles smaller than 2.5 microns, which are too fine to be blocked, and the minimum infection dose is smaller than one aerosol particle. Basically, folks, what they're saying is there's enough of this virus in a particle that can be relatively unaffected by gravity for a long period of time. There's enough virus in these particles to make you sick. And these particles just hang out in the air. Okay? So he points to the paper by Shaman et al. 2010 showed that the seasonal pattern of extra respiratory disease mortality can be explained quantitatively on the sole basis of absolute humidity and its direct controlling impact on transmission of airborne pathogens. As humidity rises and we go into the warmer seasons, the ability for these particulates to remain floating in the air decreases because they tend to glom onto more particles, and eventually gravity takes them to the ground. All right, it's not that hard to understand. The pathogen-laden droplets' half-life decreases with increasing ambient humidity. And this is not just something I made up. This is based on a long-established clinical paper cited since 1961. Harper experimentally showed, he didn't just run a model or a computer, he didn't just create a computer model. He actually experimented and showed that viral pathogen-carrying droplets were activated within shorter and shorter times as ambient humidity was increased. So the reason that's considered good evidence is because he actually did an experiment, actual science. And Dupre in 2012 established that such small aerosol particles, fluidity suspended in air of biological origin, are of every variety and are everywhere, including down to virion sizes. It's not entirely unlikely that viruses can thereby be physically transported over intercontinental distances. That's according to a paper cited since 1989 by Hammond. Indoor airborne virus concentrations have been shown to exist primarily as aerosol particles of diameter smaller than 2.5 microns, such as in the actual experiments carried out by Yang et al., cited since 2011. Such small particles are part of air fluidity and are not subject to gravitational sedimentation and would not be stopped by long-range inertial impact. That means if you're walking across Home Depot and you have a bandana on your face, and you walk into one of these particles, the bandana won't stop it. Neither will the N95 mask. Properly fitted, it won't. The pore size in an N95 mask is 0.3 microns or bigger. These particles are 0.25 or smaller, and the virus itself is about 1 nanometer. Okay? So imagine you're walking across the grocery store and there's an aerosolized particle that has enough of the virus in it to make you sick, and it splats on the front of your filthy bandana. Well, over the course of just a few minutes, the liquid all dries and evaporates, and now you have just the naked virus, which is teeny, tiny, tiny. And you breathe it in, but then also you blow it out on other people. Thank you very much. All right. I'll post this up because this thing cites, I think, 7... actual clinical randomized controlled trial studies. And so the reason I haven't cited these before is because I really didn't think it was necessary. I thought this was all very well established. But I don't know, maybe I'm a geek and I've read too much and I don't know. I thought there would be... Anyway, let's move on because, we're going long. Okay, we're going to go long because I got to talk about this... Maybe I'll stop with this, huh? Maybe I'll stop with this. Let me see here. No, I got to talk about some of this. We have an op-ed that was accepted in USA Today on June 24th, and it's since been deleted. Key phrases were deleted from their print paper, and it's been disappeared from the online version of USA Today. The NOQ report reprinted it, though, before they disappeared it. The op-ed is written by a physician and lawyer, so not a dumb person. Holds an MD and a JD, an MD-JD. And he says, it's clear to me as a physician and lawyer that disinformation has caused us to turn a medical issue into a legal crisis. The scientific usefulness of a mask has been overstated, and the foundational importance of the Constitution has been understated. So that we have normalized people screaming obscenities at... So we have now normalized people screaming obscenities at each other while hiking. It's the mask argument. Anyway, folks, I would replace the word Constitution with Christian liberty, but let's just give... This is a lawyer and a doctor. This is not a right-wing Christian, I'm sure. Anyway, he goes on to say that not wearing a mask is not mere personal choice, like deciding between a head covering or a t-shirt. It is a flashpoint for being a free human being who has consented to be governed, but has not consented to be ruled. We do not consent to a masked America, because that is a fundamental change in American society, culture, norms, and rights. Folks, it's just like the lockdowns. Is it worth it? Do we throw off 5,000 years of civilized human behavior in order to achieve almost anything is not worth that? And to put masks on everyone, folks, it's... Let me return to the JD, MD, who reminds us that people who are apathetic toward their own liberty cannot eliminate the God-given rights for those who are not. Well, apparently they can, because they're doing it every day. But I think he means they shouldn't be able to, or they shouldn't. He says, this is not the first or last time that people who believe in superstition are screaming the loudest. Mm-hmm. Yes. The Constitution exists precisely to protect all people during times of mass hysteria. Again, I would replace the Constitution with God-given rights, but I agree with the gist of the JDMD. Meanwhile, deeper into the widespread tyranny file, Governor Mike Inslee, is this right? No. Who do I have here? Who's the latest tyrant? Yakima County, that's Washington State. Yes, yes, Governor Jay Inslee and all the rest of the flinchers. They've declared a statewide no mask, no service order, telling businesses that they are not allowed to serve people without a mask. Why? Well, because infections per day peaked in April. They decreased in April and May, and then they started increasing again in June, and now it's back up to its peak, and we're all scared. So when I read this article, I you know, just like the clinical studies cited by Dr. Rancourt, I really thought a lot of this was common sense. So no coronavirus ever. A cold, right? The common cold and the flu, whatever you want to... The cold and flu never accelerate in June. It doesn't happen. It's never happened. It's never going to happen. And I've been struggling with how could this be happening? I mean, this virus may be novel, but it's not that novel that it defies the behavior of all other coronaviruses. It's just not possible. And I'm going to get into that, but before I go, I want to just say that Jay Inslee, the governor, when he announced his no mask, no service mandate, that no one should be able to buy or sell unless they take the mark, he said the mask is a symbol that we care about the community. It's a symbol that we care about our loved ones. So he knows it's not real. Yeah. He just said it's a symbol. So why do I need to symbolize that? Jay Inslee has to symbolize it because he's participated in the greatest mass murder in all of human history. And so he has to find a symbol that he actually cares about life. But normal people, we don't need a symbol for that. It's kind of an understanding we have. It's called civilization. We care about other people's lives. Well, here we go, folks. to find out how it could be that this virus is behaving differently than any other virus in all of human history, we have to go to the widespread panic file, where we discover that new guidance for the definition of a COVID-19 positive infections is likely the biggest background cause in this dramatic upswing in positive test results. And I'll link this up on the site because they link to actual documents from actual governing bodies. So according to guidance in at least one county in Texas, a COVID-19 case is now 15 different types of people, only one of which has to actually test positive. That's right. The new guidance suggests that anyone who comes into contact with a person who tests positive is now also considered positive. So the contact tracers are out there pumping up the numbers, and they're fake numbers because coronaviruses don't increase in June. The relative humidity increases and viral infections decline. And this virus may be novel. It's not that novel. Listen to this. More from the widespread panic file. The CDC posted on Tuesday, June 30th, to the frequently asked questions, what does your results mean when you're tested for COVID-19? Here's what the CDC says. This isn't someone in a tinfoil hat writing for InfoWars. This is the CDC. They say a positive test result shows you may have antibodies from an infection with the virus that causes COVID-19. However, there is a chance a positive result means that you have antibodies from an infection with a virus from the same family of viruses called coronaviruses. So that anyone who's been infected with a cold virus in the last few months is now being counted as positive for COVID-19. That's why the numbers are going up, defying reason and logic and science and medicine. That's why. It's because governing officials, rapacious, aggressive, power-hungry governing officials who want to lord it over us and to get Donald Trump out of the office, are lying to us and pumping up fake numbers. Is it a conspiracy? Well, there's more than one person doing it, so I suppose you could call it a conspiracy. J.B. Neiman, general counsel of a Texas-based healthcare company, told former New York Times reporter Alex Berenson that the bottom line here is money. Discharge planners, I talked about the political and the power side of this, so we've got that going. But then there's the money side, too. And so you take all three of those into account, and you have the foundation of the, you basically have the three legs of the stool that drive the conspiracy to pump up the phony COVID-19 numbers that allows Gavin Newsom to close wineries in counties all around him, but not his. And he closes counties which county is it where Tesla is? Hold on a second. Where is it? I can't find it. I can't. There it is. So why is Merced County closed in Northern California? I'm sorry, the Central Valley. Let's see. What did he close? Kern County, Kings County, Merced County, and Tulare County in the Central Valley. Fresno County also closed by Gavin Newsom. But Napa remains open. And Napa is where Newsom's winery is. So how does he keep Napa? He says, well, it's all just, it's a part of a formula that we have. You know, I don't control it. You know, the Napa just has fewer COVID cases than these other agricultural counties. And so, you know, it's just by luck of the draw, we haven't had. Oddly enough, though, he hasn't closed Alameda County. That's Oakland, the East Bay area, where COVID numbers are much higher than these other counties that he closed. Why didn't he close that? Because Tesla's there. And Tesla said, if you lock me down, I'm leaving. Proving that this is all political. It's all about money and politics. Now back to the money part. This hospital executive, this guy who owns 13 clinics, he says discharge planners are being pressured to put COVID as the primary diagnosis because it pays more. He says this may be an explanation for why there's a gap in hospital executives saying they have plenty of capacity and yet an increasing number of COVID hospitalizations. He says you open up your hospitals for normal medical care, you test everyone, and then you count the common cold as COVID-19, well, naturally, the result is a higher percentage of patients who have COVID. The media, meanwhile, is breathlessly reporting a spike in new infections. Even though we're all wearing masks, by the way. But virtually no one is reporting that deaths from the virus are way down, which is the fact. The death rate continues to fall. Deaths have been declining steadily at least until June 26th. Some states started adding probable deaths on that date. Because the death rate story was going to catch up with them, so they got to find a way to lie about that. Yeah, the death rate rose again to 1,200, over 1,200 last Tuesday. But there was a reason for that. That spike was because it included more than 600 backdated New York City cases, most from 3 weeks or more ago. And they just counted them all on that day. Is that on purpose? Maybe that's just a clerical stupidity because they're incompetent. In reality, deaths dropped again week over week about 25%. But we're not allowed to report any good news on this because an awful lot of people have an awful lot invested in this being awful for as long as possible. Meanwhile, I talked about the contact tracers. From the widespread tyranny file, one county executive in New York, Ed Day, he says he's not looking to get anyone into trouble. He just wants to speak with them to find out who else might be infected so he can help slow the spread. He's going to help slow. That's all he wants to do. He says, we want people to do the right thing for their neighbors and voluntarily speak to health officials. We just want them to voluntarily do it. But if they won't, we will subpoena them. We will use the force of law, which is backed by the barrel of a gun, against people who will not speak to our contact tracers. Why, he says, we will not have the health of our county compromised because of ignorance, stupidity, or obstinance. That's me he's talking about. I'm ignorant, I'm stupid, and I'm obstinate because I will not remain terrified of a virus that's just not that terrifying for most of the population. He says, Rockland County, New York, will issue subpoenas to compel people to speak to contact tracers because many are not speaking voluntarily. Public health officials say that contact tracing is a key step in slowing the spread of the coronavirus. The Hill publishes that. You should. I mean, if you're. All right, I have to put on my happy face. That's right. Just put on your happy face. The poor folks at the Hill have been psychologically wounded like the rest. And so they give publicity to utter drivel. Contact tracing in a country of 350 million people? All right. To even include that in the article indicates that the poor people writing for the Hill are psychologically wounded and probably remain still scared. Finally, folks, about half of the people who've died with the coronavirus have died in nursing homes. Yeah. So what does that say? Don't put someone you love in a nursing home. Now, just don't do it, okay? That's all. Don't put someone you love in a nursing home. If you do, it's a sign that you're a bad person. Does that hurt your feelings? I don't care. You're a bad person. All right, and now amidst all this, folks, the Federal Reserve is now buying. They've released a list of 750 companies, including some of the biggest ones you've ever heard of, and they're going to buy their corporate bonds. Yeah, it's purchased almost $500 million in corporate bonds from 86 private companies, big ones. It's like Pharaoh buying up everything during the famine before the Exodus. But the famine in before the Exodus was real. It wasn't just a self-inflicted psychological injury. People were actually dying. But here we've just, we're all injured and hurting and we need help and humor, and that's what I'm going to try to do. Folks, I want to thank my friends at realscienceradio.com. Go check it out. At AmericanRightToLife.com and my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.